Hey everyone, we want to take a moment to tell you about the sponsor of this podcast, Roosevelt's.
You may know Roosevelt's as the company who makes those rad all over print button downs with just about every franchise that you love.
They of course have Star Wars, because this is a Star Wars podcast, but they also have Harry Potter, Disney, Pixar, Marvel, NASA, WWE, The Office, Nickelodeon, Rick and Morty, Friends, all kinds of other stuff, including new lines from Yellowstone and The Godfather.
And not just button-downs, but t-shirts, they do shorts, jackets, hoodies, koozies, flannels, so many different kinds of items, so many dope designs. So if you're interested in picking something up for the first time, go to rsvlts.com and use promo code THANKTHEMAKER with no spaces to get 20% off your first purchase. Once again, that's rsvlts.com. Use promo code THANKTHEMAKER to get 20% off of your first purchase.
Hello there, and welcome to Thank the Maker, a podcast about heroes, princesses, scoundrels, hokey religions, ancient weapons, and all things Star Wars. I'm Adam Russell, and we are more on time than we've ever been. Am I wrong?
Well, I'm Mike Forster, and I'm not a rock star, and that's probably why we are on time tonight, because we are less rock star for a lot of reasons. One, as we celebrate our co-host, Nick Ganbarian of Bayside, who is on tour right now and also had a new album come out last week.
Yes.
Which is great. Did you get a chance to listen through it and rip through it?
I have not yet. I'm really bad at listening to new music.
Yep.
And I'm a terrible friend.
This tracks.
I have such a backlog of podcasts I'm trying to catch up with, TV shows and everything. So finding the time where I'm also in the mood to like take something in and really absorb it. It's tough.
I get that.
First world problems. I don't know.
I get that. Well, if you sit at a desk like I do all day, which I know that you don't, sometimes you do.
I do on Wednesday nights.
I tend to, I'm you know, I'll rip through an album and, you know, being, of course, the music model of the way that things are released these days, there's a significant amount of songs that we've already heard off it, but there's some other songs that we have not heard and I keep saying that Bayside's probably making the best music they've ever made right now. Fight me in the comments if you want, but I don't think anybody will because they're crushing it. And our dear friend Ryan Key is also doing things right now, too.
Yeah. Oh, he's doing a secret thing right now.
Yeah, we can't talk about that.
Yep.
Right.
I would agree that Bayside's making the best music they've made ever, just based on like the handful of songs that they've put out that I have heard in the past couple of years, like since I've known Nick, basically.
Yeah.
They just keep getting better, which is great because that's rare.
When do they come to St. Louis?
They don't on this tour, actually.
What?
But whatever, I don't know. St. Louis isn't exactly like a hot market for anyone.
Sure, I get that.
Unless you're Breaking Benjamin or something like that.
Right. But middle America angst, I do get that.
Yeah.
And you guys are also embarking on a tour eventually here soon, ish, right?
Ish, yeah. Okay. Closer to you than we've ever been. We're playing, there's a festival up there.
Called Phase Fest. Oh, no.
Eclair?
Well, Phase Fest is one of them, and then what's the other one? There is one in Eau Claire,
yeah. I don't know what it's called, but
it's a fest.
Yeah, it's up there.
Yeah.
Near Canada.
Right.
Not Canada.
Now you're still like a whole state away.
Yeah.
I'll come hang. I think we have a good crew that'll come down. We should get an Airbnb. Let's just get a whole house.
And trash it.
Trash it.
Probably commit arson.
Let's do a podcast from it and then trash it so that we have evidence that we were there. This seems like a bad idea. Also, we have a lot of Star Wars news besides that. What are we talking about today? Besides Bad Batch, did you get a chance to watch the Star Wars Outlaws trailer for the single person story? The whole thing, there is no multiplayer, but they kind of revealed the story and the timeline of which Outlaws takes place, which I thought was super interesting.
For sure. You know, the name says it all. It's like a scoundrel kind of thing. You get involved with crime syndicates, all the crime syndicates that we know, and it looks like, is this confirmed that that's Kira representing Crimson Dawn?
It's already out there enough. I think they revealed it in one of the Game Informer, Games Radar, one of these giant media companies, totally spoiled it for people. I thought it was super funny that you've got the Clatoonians were representing the Hutts. I thought that was great. Or the Weakways, I think, were representing the Hutts. You had the Pikes, which have the classic Book of Boba Fett, squid face. They weren't the kind of Clone Wars with the huge back helmets and all that. I thought that was interesting. And then, yeah, Kira. And I mean, Jabba the Hutt's in it. Like, I was like, yo.
Himself, the man.
Yeah, it's unbelievably cool.
So and the main character's in his palace in the trailer.
It's awesome. What do you think? Is Kira, like, in charge of... I'm looking at the comments. I'm looking at Discord. I'm seeing what people are saying. Do we think that she has to transport the Carbonite Han Solo to Jabba the Hutt?
That would be the coolest story that they could weave in there. I mean, because we see him.
Because there is, I think, in War of the Bounty Hunters, please, our Discord, who's chatting, I think there is something about, like, someone steals Han from Boba. War of the Bounty Hunters, there's a character from War of the Bounty Hunters, a great comic series that Marvel is doing. I know you haven't gamed in a long time, but this might be one. I mean, once you get in, you're gonna have to play, like, all these games. You know that, right?
Yeah, and I have a gaming PC en route to my home right now.
You do?
I do.
Ooh. Okay. Well, this comes out August 30th, I think. I think it's at the end of the summer. So that's pretty exciting. And yeah, I don't know. What else? What else did we miss?
The other big thing that we were trying to get together to do a full breakdown of, but we just couldn't align the stars because of this busy week, is the trailer for, out of nowhere, unexpectedly, Tales of the Empire.
Which I think, personally, it makes sense as to why people were kind of like, oh, we're getting these random double episodes of Bad Batch to probably shift around open up May the 4th, a reveal.
Yeah. You know,
which I think at this point they've done this a couple times for animated shows. So the fact that we got, I mean, and this was a hammer of a trailer. I was,
dude,
like,
yes.
When they first, like, I'm like, okay, cool. We're going to get, like, a little Night Sister background. And all of a sudden it was just like, all of your favorite characters from the bad guys, like Thrawn. We've got, like, just rolling all of these amazing characters out at the great timeline too. Super geeked on that. Diana Lee and Santo reprising the role as Morgan Elsbeth in her younger days, which I think is amazing. You've got Black Kit Thrawn from, I think, from the early, the pre Grand Admiral days. Maybe we should do a breakdown for our patrons after.
Yeah, let's talk about that for our after-show segment that we do every week instead of doing this Star Wars chat pack, which is fun. Since it's just two of us, it will be a little more efficient, our breakdown of that trailer. So we can go through, like, frame by frame and see what's what. Because it is like, I love Tales of the Jedi, and this seems like, number one, it is like the spiritual sequel to it. You know, it's not an actual sequel, but it's same theme, same kind of approach. And it looks to me like it's going to be twice as good, minimum.
Right.
So
right.
I couldn't, I mean, we've got, like, loose ends from the Clone Wars being tied up with it, filling in blanks, just all kinds of, you know, we're tying together the Ahsoka series with the other Tales of the Jedi stuff, you know, in terms of the Inquisitors. We're just like you said, it's just this checklist of all the bad guys, and we're going to hit it. All it seems like. So I'm pumped.
Yeah, that's gonna be amazing. And talk about amazing. Great episode of Bad Batch today.
Hell of an episode.
I posted yesterday, and I please, if you're the Star Wars marketing person on social media, do not be mad at me. But you know, they constantly seem to do this where they drop, like, probably what should have been today's promo. Like the day before, because it was like, out now, available now to watch Bad Batch. You know, and I'm like, oh. I literally clicked on Disney Plus to see if they just, like, blanket fire sale the rest of the season, just in case of that, what was happening. But indeed, it was just more promo that went out a little too early. That's fine. Okay.
It's fine.
But it was great. It was a great episode today.
Yeah. I heard some folks say that they didn't love it. Someone actually went as far as to say it was one of their least favorite. I don't get it. I know they rehashed some things at the end, you know, at Tantus, but I don't know. In terms of, like, action and telling a, you know, like an Indiana Jones heist action kind of thing, I thought it was incredible. I thought the score was amazing as usual. It was visually stunning, like incredibly visually stunning. There was some stuff in this one that looked like it was pulled straight from concept art. Like it looked like a painting in the best way possible. Yeah. I'll show one right now, actually. This establishing shot of the prison.
So good.
Like the work camp.
Yeah.
Dude, look at that thing. It's like a painting. They said, no, screw it. It just looks good. Just use it. throw the tank on it.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, like they were like, who's this Christian Alsman or someone, Doug Chang, you know? Oh, okay, this looks amazing. Anton Grander, someone.
Paste, render.
Yeah, right, that's good. Just add the, and then just animate a little bit of the, the little juggernaut going through there. I thought this episode was super strong. I think, I understand what people are frustrated about. You know, this episode was shorter in regards to how people are saying, did this really move the plot along? I think Omega coming back to Tantsus was inevitable, and however they were going to show that was important, right? This was a necessary episode of what needed to happen. As I said in my bingo card, ba-ding, bringing Rampart back was crucial. But I also think in the way that they handled it, Crosshair's got a ton of sass, cracks me up, you know. What, are you going to kill me? He's like, not yet.
Yeah.
Loved that. Loved everything about that. And I agree with you, dude. The animation, specifically, I think when I had my wow moment was when the two, we're calling them juggernauts, but you know, at this point, we have more on that later. But when their side cannons came out and they shot the, like, almost the tiny little missiles that almost look like flares. I was like, level up. Like, this looked, I almost couldn't tell if it was animated. It looked live action to me in terms of the rendering, the scaling, the shadows. I mean, everything about it was like, is insane.
I mean, the Bad Batch, we're on the third season. We had the 2 or 3 episode arc in season 7 of The Clone Wars, and that looked incredible. Season 7 of The Clone Wars looked incredible. But I was watching a recap thing earlier, and they showed a clip from, I think, that.
Okay.
And it's not quite as drastic as looking at season 6 or 7 of The Clone Wars compared to 1, 2, or 3, but it was pretty drastic.
Right.
Texturing, especially. I think they've really leveled it up, and they've got the cinematography dial, like, you know, the digital lighting.
Yeah.
It's just it's such a beautiful way to tell these stories. And I know a lot of people, we talk about this all the time, just can't get into animation.
How?
But God, if you're listening, you have to. You're not listening right now.
That's true.
But tell your friends. Like, it's just, I would almost rather have animation 75% of the time give us a banger of a TV, of a live action TV show once a year, and then a movie every 3.
Yeah. Yeah.
Give me all the animation.
I'm with you on that. I think we're at that point where I understand that there's a lot of people who, that animation, there's a lot of people who held the water for Star Wars animation. I think in some ways, George's vision of what he wanted to make at that point was animation, right? It was a passion of his. It was a way for him to continue to tell dynamic storytelling. But looking at where we are now, I'm like, especially with the Tales of the Empire.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, like I'm in. For me now, I'm like, there always has to be animated Star Wars. Like, that's just how 100%. I feel, right? You know what I mean? And I think if we're going to find out what happens after Bad Batch, there's a lot of speculation about the Ventress episode and saying, you know, they've alluded that there was more to come. We're going to learn more of her story. Being that, of course, that we're getting in Tales of the Empire, we're getting Morgan Elsbeth, we're getting more Night Sister story. So maybe that tells a little bit of what happens with Ventress. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't want to speculate too hard, but like I'm in. After seeing how amazing Bad Batch season 3 is, it's just got to be Star Wars at this point. It's all Star Wars. We need more. Lucasfilm, listen to us. We're here.
Hey everyone, we want to take a moment to tell you about the sponsor of this podcast, Roosevelt's.
You may know Roosevelt's as the company who makes those rad all over print button-downs with just about every franchise that you love.
They of course have Star Wars, because this is a Star Wars podcast, but they also have Harry Potter, Disney, Pixar, Marvel, NASA, WWE, The Office, Nickelodeon, Rick and Morty, Friends, all kinds of other stuff, including new lines from Yellowstone and The Godfather.
And not just button-downs, but t-shirts. They do shorts, jackets, hoodies, koozies, flannels, so many different kinds of items, so many dope designs. So if you're interested in picking something up for the first time, go to rsvlts.com and use promo code thankthemaker with no spaces to get 20% off your first purchase. Once again, that's rsvlts.com. Use promo code thankthemaker to get 20% off of your first purchase.
All right, let's get into stolen plans.
What have you done with those plans?
The Bad Batch Season 3, Episode 12, Juggernaut, debuted today, April 10th, 2024, on Disney Plus. Disney Plus description: while seeking an unexpected source, the Bad Batch make a daring escape. 22-minute runtime, directed by Stuart Lee, written by Ezra Nachman, who also wrote Season 2, Episode 7, Clone Conspiracy, and Season 3, Episode 4, A Different Approach. He also worked on like 40 episodes of the NBC show Manifest.
Is that with the disappearing plane?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is pre-Boeing days, so I guess maybe.
Yeah. Oh, a little easier to watch that.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is only his third Star Wars anything ever. So
interesting.
Good on him. Great writing.
What's interesting, too, though, is like how they just, he's busy on Manifest, right? That's a big show. I totally get it. But then just to have these like little sprinkles of, oh, yeah, I did this one episode of Clone. I'm like, huh?
Yeah.
That would be so hard for me as a writer to be like, I got to do an episode of Star Wars. And they'd be like, did you do more? I'd be like, no, just one episode.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it. I'd be like, I'm down for a whole season. I don't know how that works out. Someone can explain it to me.
Maybe he's the kind of dude that just, you know, he feels confident about an idea. He does it, and he backs off until he has another one.
Just likes to write.
He gets called.
Which is crazy. I get that. Yeah. Ooh, Rampart's back. So we got a cool shout out.
Noshir Dalal returns as the voice of Rampart. And did we ever mention, I would assume we did, the first time we saw Hemlock, that the voice of Hemlock is Jimmy Simpson.
Which, if we break it down for people who are like, who's Jimmy Simpson?
Yeah.
It's literally the man in black from Westworld.
The best dude who could do the voice. Younger William in Westworld. And we've probably talked about it on the show plenty of times. Westworld, to me, is like, Westworld season one is, I think, maybe my favorite season of TV ever.
Ooh, that is a big claim. I honestly, I can respect it. I really can. But yeah, that
just the first season.
Just the fact that like he, I think that was what made that part in Westworld so jarring.
Mm-hmm.
When you realized that when he's first introduced with this, who's his brother-in-law or whoever that was when they go to Westworld, right? And like his face just looks so like, we're going. This is what an
bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Yeah, exactly. And then his brother, you know, his brother-in-law's like, oh, just hookers and killing people. Like, let's do it, right? And he like can't deal with it, right? And then to have him be Hemlock, I'm like, ooh, this like gives me secondary chills down my spine because I want to say that like he seems like such a nice fella.
The episode when he starts to turn though in Westworld is like,
it's dark.
It's great.
It's awesome. It's so good. So that's I think we have called that out, but just the fact that I think most people didn't realize who that was, especially as a lot of us older millennial, early Gen Xer, that was totally aimed at us as far as our marketing really goes. So hopefully that blows someone's mind today.
Blew my mind when I was reminded. It's a good thing about having ADHD and just forgetting things. When I'm reminded, it's like...
it's like being reintroduced to it all over again, baby.
Yeah, it's great. All right, let's discuss a few things before we get into this big, healthy Den of Antiquities segment. So Omega's gone, captured, taken to Tantus. We jump back in right where we left off with Pabu now just kind of being left alone. They've got Omega, the Empire's leaving, and the Batch is like, oh God, what are we going to do? They don't know where Tantus is, and Crosshair brings up Rampart might know.
Mm-hmm.
He's on an Imperial prison planet. They don't know how to get there.
Right.
Fee shows up. She's got a ship. Let's go. No, because their ship's gone, if you remember.
Did you feel, Adam, like Crosshair almost intentionally withheld information?
Yes.
Like Hunter kind of accuses him of it, and he's like, has a, I don't know, right? Like, it's almost like your heart could kind of break for the guy because like he literally holds up the thing that like has like, he's got his, his twitch, his murmur, whatever you'd call it. He's like, I can't go back there. So like at this point, like maybe this is a part of Crosshair's the first step to healing is always admitting that you finally have a problem, right? Because he was just ignoring. And Omega is helping him understand that like what happened to you is okay to recognize that like it got to you, man. It's okay, right? So for him to intentionally kind of say, I might have a little bit of information. I can understand why everyone's pissed, and I can understand why he also withheld that, right? Like, it's your heart's kind of breaking for everybody here because you're like, oh, man, but I get it. Like, give me a hug, but man, I totally get that. So it's interesting how we got that information that Rampart is still around. So,
yeah. It's also interesting later when Rampart says he doesn't know where Tentus is, but he might know how to get around that. You know?
Right. So is this the cloaking? You think this is, what do you think about that? When he said that it was ominous enough.
Yeah. He said something about it being, what was the word? Encrypted?
Sure.
Like the coordinates or something, right?
Yeah.
He might know how to get around that. Oh God, I don't know. It could be all kinds of fun stuff. Does it have to be something with a deeper implication? I don't know. Because it could be something as simple as, you know, you get to the right terminal and you hack it. I don't know. You know, some little like plot point, but I don't know. Any ideas?
I think the EU, if Ryan Key were here, this is his thing. But I think the EU had that Tantus, the base, especially itself, had a cloaking device on it that made it so that it was almost like how Wakanda was shown for, I think, most people
who know
what that is. It's almost like if you were to fly over it, you wouldn't know where it was. And that was from the original time that it was mentioned in the book. So I could see that happening. I mean, I think we haven't at some point. I think it would be too fun for them to kind of tease that. But I don't know. It could be another thing of like Exegol, where there's only certain. You know, it's like you get the coordinates and then it gets scrambled after, so that no one knows. It's almost like the ultimate insurance plan that, you know, the only that three people know where it is, right? That Hemlock, the Empire, the Emperor himself, it's like, you don't know. It's like the ultimate, you know, the coordinates to the Eagle's Nest. I don't know. I have no idea.
Right.
Well, I'm sure we'll find out.
Well, I will opt out on reading the Wikipedia article on any of those EU books. I just like to be surprised.
Yeah.
So I'm going to wait.
Sure.
So on Tantus, Emery Carr, she's testing Omega's blood. The reluctance is apparent now. It's pretty prominent. She gets a positive result as usual. Project Necromancer, we get a rehashing of those details via Hemlock to Omega, because he brings her in. He's like, well, you're here. Here's the deal. And he drops all that again. I don't think there's anything new here, but let's just read this quote and tell me if you picked up anything new. He says, an individual's M count cannot be directly replicated. Attempts have been made, but each time the level's degraded. We tried various methods, mixing samples from our other test subjects, yet nothing worked until we combined your sample with one of our M-count specimens. You are a vital piece to our work here, Omega. None of that's new, right?
I think we knew all this. I think they were just said in different ways. I think we knew that midichlorian counts could not be cloned, essentially, right? I think we had understood that the living force and all of that is individualized. It's not something that can be manipulated by a direct. It's almost like a direct insult to what the force is. And so I think this idea of mixing samples with other test subjects, combined your sample with one of our end count specimens. So now it's once again gets back to this conversation of, you know, is Omega's body essentially just a supportive transport for going from one force user to another? If you are growing another body that is able to accept midichlorians, say a Snoke looking thing, that's a pretty damn good way to transport. And I think this is interesting about it, because saying directly replicated, we think back to when Snoke is introduced in those tanks, you have Palpatine saying, I made Snoke.
Yeah.
There were times where I think we had speculated, was Snoke a failed clone, right? So technically that still could be true. I'm very interested to see exactly what that is. Then we're speculating about the phase one dark troopers, that they needed Gideon, you know, needed to have a human in the suit, needed to have someone with the force in the suit. We are going to get some answers very quickly here.
Yeah.
Bring it on.
I just pulled up the quote from last episode, Hemlock telling Emery as he was bringing her in. And it is almost exactly the same. It's just different context about Nala Se knew of another way. That's why she aided in Omega's escape. The young clone's blood was the only binder that's proven to be compatible with their DNA to recreate their M count levels, and why Omega must be found. So yeah.
Yeah.
It is a rehashing, but it does lead to, as predicted, Omega meeting the force sensitive children, and the last two lines that Hemlock delivers to her before this whole thing ties up is, they are the rest of the puzzle and this is your new home.
Oof.
Rough.
The way, what's the other kid's name?
Jax is one of them.
Jax looks up and he kind of is like, oh, another kid. And I'm just like, oh man.
Yeah.
That was bad.
It's rough.
That was really bad. But if there's anyone who's going to be able to get out and figure it out.
Yeah. Rally the troops.
It's Omega.
Yeah. She's the one.
Omega.
There was one other moment that I can't remember specifically, and I meant to write it down, and I, of course, didn't. It was a great follow-up to Crosshair. To remember last week we talked about the role reversal where Omega told Crosshair, look, this is the only way. It's the only way for this to work. He says to, I think, Wrecker. Wrecker says something like, I can't believe we just let her go. And he says something like, she saved all these people's lives, essentially.
Sure.
You know, he didn't want to accept it in the moment, but now he does. And I mean, this could be minutes later, but nonetheless, it's like the teacher, the student becomes a teacher and so on. And it just keeps rolling where they have this better understanding of each other and they're teaching each other. And it is to me as cool or better than the tech character arc.
Sure.
And the relationship building and, you know, the up and down of that. So again, it's just all teeing up this big, beautiful, terrible tragedy of Crosshair dying. It's going to happen.
We all kind of know it's going to happen. It's something, I feel like we're getting closer and closer. This was a shorter episode. I'm like, get me to next week already, because I think we're going to get juicy next week. I think it's going to happen. I'm excited about that. So we got to get in this den though, man. This den is big. It's deep.
Let's do it.
For over 1,000 generations.
It is the Darksaber.
Torgon. Torgosh.
It's a Kalikori.
A Sith Wayfinder.
Dark science. Cloning. Secrets only the Sith knew.
The Den of Antiquities. Bad Batch. We are in a lot of Imperial stuff this week, which I think is great. I have to, I think for the patrons who are going to really enjoy this next section here, Adam went off in the den this week. So I would like to, of course, shout out to Adam the Skull for doing this work, because there's a lot of stuff in here. But let's first get into it. In the Imperial work camp where Rampart is imprisoned, there's an Ugnaught that breaks a valve and an alarm goes off. Do we have that sound?
It goes like this.
Okay. That sound, the alarm sound, is the same sound from Echo Base in The Empire Strikes Back, where Han and Chewie are working on the Falcon.
To love. It's like the exact same pitch.
Which is awesome, because the Ugnaught little throwback is the first time that we met them was in Empire Strikes Back. So that is a great little, just kind of a little Easter egg out there for them Star Wars fans who might be able to find that stuff. The orange Imperial prison uniforms, very similar to the orange Republic prison uniforms that we see in the Clone Wars. So we're catching a vibe of this. I think that's great. You know, there was a lot of orange fabric floating around at this time. Probably why the X-Wings ran up orange. There's a lot. We just got a surplus of orange fabric.
This is a nice little progression. So these are the ones in the episode here that we're showing on screen. They're orange with white trim.
Yep.
If you go back to the Republic ones, the original Republic ones in the Clone Wars, they're just solid orange.
Solid orange.
So we go from solid orange to orange with white trim, and then eventually the full-blown Imperial ones, white with orange trim.
Right.
Which we see in Andor. So nice little
Nice little inverse there, which is pretty cool. And then the full solid orange one for the Republic, if they're still there, ends up becoming the X-Wing suit. Maybe. Who knows? When the prisoners are first being loaded into the Juggernaut transport, you can briefly see a prisoner at the end of the line that looks a heck of a lot like a Lasat. And if you're wondering who what a Lasat is with these funny big ears here, our favorite Lasat is Zeb Aurelius from Star Wars Rebels. And in The Mandalorian Season 3 that we saw him in the pilot hangar, Lasats have a, I mean, they have a pretty, there's different, their faces are a little bit different, their bone structure is different, but they're kind of their telltale sign is those big pointy ears, right? I would say so.
And the mouth really low, the jaw thing is kind of distinct.
Kind of got that like upturned bat nose. You know, so I think I think this is pretty safe to say this is probably a Lasat in this, which I love this. I think that's great. Now, the other thing is that it could also be a Lutrillian, which first appeared in the Mos Eisley Cantina in A New Hope, briefly in the background. I think we recognize these characters. This is the Rick Baker squad that he had. He was responsible for a lot of these costumes here that many of us know. I mean, you can see almost like a little, what I love about this is you've almost got this, this little Trandoshan right down here in the front that didn't get a whole lot of love, but this is an incredible photo here. Especially cause I love, I know that the bat has a name, but I just love the, you know, the two hands on the drink.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. The Lutrullians were featured prominently in season four of the Clone Wars, the deception arc where Obi-Wan went undercover as the bounty hunter, Rako Hardeen, I think that was his name, that was his name, in prison. So we can see that these characters have a long, long life within Star Wars, starting all the way back to 1976 when it was filmed. I love everything about this. This was a Tunisia spot, unbelievably cool. Yeah, man. Star Wars is cool.
This is a tough call, man. I do like Star Wars.
I think it's a Lasat.
I really want it to be a Lasat because this would be the first on-screen appearance ever aside from Rebels and Ahsoka. But the only thing is that's making me lean towards two things. It's making me lean towards Lutrillians is one, see this, for anyone who's watching on the left, this animated shot of this Lutrillian is in prison.
He got those ears.
There are a bunch of Lutrillians in this prison. Maybe they're just always getting into bad stuff or they're just always being oppressed. Most likely the latter. Here's the kicker. Lasats, we know, have those big...
Yeah.
They kind of walk on their toes, you know?
Right.
So they have those big, strange feet. If we look at the wide of this shot from the Bad Batch, look at the feet down.
Ah, sure.
In the bottom right corner. Yep. Those are pretty human-looking feet.
Yep, okay. And then it looks like we also have a... Like, what are those other characters in there? That looks like...
There is a Trandoshan, and there's a...
Pondababa.
Pondababa, yeah, whatever that species is.
Aqualish.
Yes.
An Aqualish. Okay. I can back it. I can back it right there. Yeah, all right. With that evidence...
But what do the feet of Lutrillians look like? I don't think we even know.
I'm assuming
because they're so obscure.
Not like Lasats. It's interesting.
But it also looks like they just copied and pasted this same model for these prisoners and just put different heads on them.
Entirely possible.
So it could be an oversight. Here's the last thing about the look of a Lasat. What is this? What are these? We're looking at a slide right now.
Where is this from?
I just searched Lasat Star Wars and... search Lasat live action Star Wars, and there's a shot of these three very, very furry, seemingly short, Lasat-ish animals that they look like, I say animals, that they, I don't know, they're just so bizarre looking. They almost look like a Planet of the Apes costume mashed up with a bat, mashed up with the Macquarie original sketch version of the Lasat, you know, that was going to be Chewie, but then got saved and reused for Rebels. I don't know what this is.
So, gosh,
they're not wearing clothes. That's the weird thing.
This is weird. Where the heck are these guys from?
I didn't do a Google image search, like reverse search with this, which I should have, but...
I mean, this is what I'm talking about. People love being on our Discord right now and talking about this because the Lasats have... I mean, they do. They have the four toes and they kind of stand up like they're almost like ostrich feet, right? Like they have like almost like the back angled, their tendon is in the back. It's not in the front. But I cannot find out where this photo is from. What is this? It's giving me the creeps.
It's on an alternate wiki, and Physics Buddy Joe in the patron chat just posted it. The Star Wars Universe fandom.
That's what I'm looking at right now too.
But that's the only place they're listed. And then that wiki is pretty sparse. It doesn't say much. It doesn't, there's no caption for this photo.
Right.
It doesn't have appearances listed. So I don't know what the hell this is.
Man, but it looks enough like a costume, right? Like unless it's from like Battlefront or there's some kind of high res render of it. But then it almost looks like their blaster almost looks like a DC, what's that, DC 17? The kind of classic Rebel fleet.
Yeah. But it's like purplish. I don't know.
I know.
You know what these look like? Were they in Maz's cantina?
What am I thinking? DC 17 is the Clone Wars.
I know what you're saying.
It's DH 17. That's what it is. I'm sorry. Sorry. I don't know why we have a Star Wars podcast.
No emails, please.
No, please. That could be. I mean, this certainly looks like, but I'm looking at appearances. And it says in appearances here, there's no, I mean, this Star Wars Universe fandom wiki, where's Physics Buddy Joe on this one? There is no listed appearances in here besides Star Wars Rebels. What the heck?
Yeah, there go the feet, Zach the Maker. It's just like dogs, technically.
Sure.
They're on the balls of their feet, on their toes. So that first bend in the back is actually their heel that's up in the air. So
right.
That's the same kind of thing.
Oh, here we go.
Hask, H-A-S-S-K. Okay, so these are not Lasats. Somebody mislabeled this. Figure it out.
Yeah, okay.
There's like a bald face kind of miniature Bigfoot looking Sasquatch kind of Sasquatch bat face.
Hask. Oh, yeah, here you go. Okay, so you're right. The Hask triplets, which I'm assuming are these guys, were thugs who spent time at the Takodana castle. So they were in Maz Kanata's castle. Yeah, bud. Nice eye right there.
Nailed
Very
it.
Very good. One of them sitting in the back drinking a drink. Interesting. And they also were in, according to Wikipedia, number of Hasks came to join Craig and Gore's pirate gang. Okay.
Sick.
This is interesting. Oh, look at that.
Case is solved.
Okay, so there we go. This is what we're doing live on Think the Maker. This is why people tune in, man. They tune in to see the Star Wars information. What do we got?
That's the shot. There we go. With the
yeah.
Yes, with the weird bikini. And Book of Boba Fett. God, that's amazing.
Yeah, look at that. That's nice. That's wonderful. Uh-huh. Oh, that's horrible.
All right.
Well, look at that. Look what we just figured out. All right, let's get into some tanks, man. I want to talk about some armored transports here. Let's get into this.
It's tank talk.
The Juggernaut Turbo Tank Transport is featured pretty heavily in this episode, and there's a few different models that we actually see. Now, naturally, we all say Juggernaut because we're assuming anything with big wheels and kind of a long, slender body is a Juggernaut, but that's not actually true. Here we go. Let's break some brains here. The model in this episode is the same one that K2SO and the Rebels rescued Jin from on the planet Wobani in Rogue One. It's a very quick shot, blink and you miss it. The first appearance of this Juggernaut, particularly, that has a little bit of a different style, it's got a little antenna on top, was seen in Revenge of the Sith on the beach in the Battle of Kashyyyk. And that same model can also be seen in several episodes of The Clone Wars.
And this one, also briefly, like I had to dig for it.
Yep.
This is also the one from the beginning of the episode that Rampart is in with his beard.
Right.
When the other shot that we're showing right here that they're loading into.
Yep.
The batch breaks him out of. That is this version that's in Revenge of the Sith.
Very interesting. And they made a Lego of it, evidently, apparently, which is cool. But let's get into the third model of the Juggernaut. Here we go. Which is featured in The Mandalorian Chapter 15, The Believer, which is the episode where Din and Miggs Mayfeld, the Bill Burr character, as everyone knows, Space Boston, infiltrated the Imperial base on Morak and got into a very similar chase fight on top situation. And this is where they have the canisters and all of that, trying to get the this is where they go in with those tank troopers, the green outfits. They look very cool. I think that's the Brown Eyes episode.
Yes.
Love that episode. And the earliest iteration, though, was actually created by Joe Johnson in concept art for the Battle of Hoth in The Empire Strikes Back, which is pretty cool.
I should have pulled that concept art. It's pretty dope.
That concept ultimately led to the all-terrain armored transport known as the AT-AT, or the AT-AT, according to whatever kind of Star Wars fan you are. And that kind of goes to show you that armored transports have been around for a long time, and there's a whole lot of them.
A lot of things to transport.
Not counting the hover tank that we see in Rogue One as well. But back to the tank chase. There's a very Indiana Jones moment during it. We could appreciate this. A trooper's hanging off the side, and the tank is very close to a cliff wall, which I think this part was awesome. They come into an outcropping in the wall. Trooper has nowhere to go, and he just gets straight up clipped. Knocked off of this thing.
Bonked.
It was very reminiscent of the slow speed tank chase, the fight in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, where at one point Indy is hanging off the side by the cannon barrel and almost gets smashed. I also think about it in terms of when Han is hanging off the back, or who is that? I think that's actually Chewbacca in Solo when he's like hanging off, which I think was also a reference to Indiana Jones.
Yep.
The chase also reminds us of the fight on top of the train in the Dial of Destiny, where Mads Mikkelsen's character gets clotheslined by that pipe right before they go, I think, into the tunnel or whatever. I can't remember what happens, but that was a great... I mean, that chasing, that fight on top of that train was also like 15 minutes long. So
right.
There are certainly a lot of moments during there. What's pretty cool is there's a great moment when Fee shoots down the ship and dives down into the planet. And you could see Hunter's helmet float off the dashboard because they're in a free fall, which I love that little detail right there. That was pretty cool.
Attention to detail.
Which you got to appreciate Fee on that one. They're like, you're going to get tracked. Like, what are you going on? She's just like, yo, turn this thing off. And everyone's like, oh, which I thought was awesome. That was super fun. And that's it for the den. I think we went pretty hard at the den today. Nice job, Adam the Skull. Very good detective work in here. We figured out new species. We figured out that the Lasats are not two bipedal regular shoe-wearing people.
No sneakers for them.
No sneakers. Size 24s, maybe. So pretty cool. This was a good one. I like this one.
Dude, honestly, my favorite part of prepping for these episodes is just doing like the not forensic, it's like archaeology in the library. Do you know what I mean?
No,
I love it. I love going down these rabbit holes and learning all this stuff. And then we get to present it to you folks, and then you get to tell us when we're wrong, and it's great.
Yeah, it's awesome.
All right, bingo card results. Like Mike said earlier, Rampart returning, that's a square for Mike.
Uh-huh.
Nothing else from this episode for any of us, but patron physics buddy Joe did bring up a good point in the Discord about my prediction that one of the Bad Batch would sacrifice himself to save someone. And I left it very vague, figuring this is going to happen. You know, it was kind of a layup. He made a great point. Omega is a part of the Bad Batch. She is a member.
This
and
is
she
true.
Did sacrifice herself to save someone, although not her life.
Sure.
She sacrificed herself by surrendering to the Empire on Pabu. Yep. So... Do I get it? Do I get the square?
I'll give you a point.
All right. I accept. I graciously accept.
Go ahead and pating that one. Let's go ahead and do it. I like that. You know what I mean? Also,
big check mark.
Realistically, like our squares have been so boring lately, we got to spice it up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So let's just go ahead. Go ahead, Adam. Spice it up. Hit that free space while you're at it, too. Go for it.
I'll take it. Yeah. Stamp it.
Let's get into some patron comments. I want to talk about this. I want to know our favorite moments from these episodes.
I love you.
I know.
Favorite moments, favorite quotes, favorite scenes, etc.
Well, Maddie Gunner says, favorite moment, the Dukes of Hazzard jump in the turbo tank.
Yes.
Of course. Favorite quote, Crosshair's callback of, you remembered me, how touching. from the Clone Wars. I thought that was awesome. Kai says all of Rampart's antics were his favorite. It was very satisfying watching a former Imperial Admiral be reduced to a joke wearing orange after his war crimes. I like that. It's
love it.
Weird in a way that the Empire is like, we're going to take someone that did terrible things for us, which we'll gladly accept your efforts, and then we'll put you in a work camp and reduce you to nothing, which I'm like, oh my, like, how bad can it be? I think it's pretty cool that Physics Buddy Joe has already put GIFs from today's episode in there, which I think is fantastic. And it says that it's clear that Tech meant a lot to Fee. When Fee says, Tech told me all about, you must be Crosshair. Tech told me all about your sparkling personality. I thought that was fantastic. My nerd story says, honestly, the whole episode is my favorite moment. After the double gut punch from last week, it was nice to have an episode like this to pick us up. This episode would have fit nicely into the Fast and Furious movies. We just need Dom Toretto showing up to tell us how important family is. Which I love that. Who needs Tantus when you got family? It's family, Brian. I love that. I think that's great. So, Adam, what about you? What do you think, man? Favorite moment, favorite scene? What are you thinking?
The chase once they got onto the ever narrowing road on the edge of the cliff.
Yeah.
Was probably my favorite sequence. It was just really expertly done. Classic like Indiana Jones style chase. But my absolute favorite moment, period, was Wrecker tossing Rampart's limp body like a rag doll up onto the ramp. I laughed out loud so hard.
Just a rag doll, like, right?
Yeah.
Just
and he started to slide, and he just, had to snatch him up.
Right. And you know that Rampart, like, woke up from that and was like, what happened to me?
Bruises everywhere.
Oh, yeah. My neck. Like, my face. What happened?
I love it.
That was pretty good. Yeah, I think my favorite, I think it was pretty obvious at this point. I'm certainly not going to side with Hemlock's mischievous way of introducing Omega into the other, with the other child prisoners. But I think just that really celebrating the animation team on this episode, just what strides we are making in Star Wars animation. I think we have a listener or two that's been part of the animation team. I know that Scott Centeno listens in when he can, and I think and they've always been super nice to us in regards to just giving us some little Easter eggs or being like, "Ooh, you caught that! Fantastic!" They're awesome, and so I want to, of course, shout out to the creative team, the story team, the animation team for doing all this, because these episodes are so good, and I'm just the importance of these. It does kill me to know that there's not a ton of people that are watching Bad Batch, and I don't know, watch this, and I'm with you. Like, we talked about it at the top of the hour. How are you missing this? Like, this is so good. So shout out to the animation teams, creative teams, for bringing this to life, because this was one of those episodes where you got to look back and go, damn, we made that look real good.
Real good.
Real good.
Beautiful work, folks. All right, we're going to go ahead and wrap up. Two of us here makes for a shorter episode. That's what it is.
Nice little compact.
But it was great. We loved it, like we keep saying. And we're stoked for the next three to wrap this thing up. And by all reports, it is brutal. A brutal emotional ending. So I'm ready for it. I think I'm ready for it. We'll find out.
When are you going to get your tattoo, Adam?
I have one skull tattoo.
Okay.
A friend of mine did it for me in Japan, actually, years ago. He lives here now.
Okay.
I kind of think it should be a Clone Force 99 skull instead. I would feel really bad lasering this off and replacing it, but maybe that's what I should do. I don't know.
Maybe two skulls.
But I think that's the way to go.
Sure.
Okay. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe a pair.
Entirely possible. Entirely possible.
Anything's possible.
Anything else we got going on in July, maybe? Maybe some other news happening in August? Anything going on?
We do have two.
Oh.
For the first time ever, simultaneously two. Mosh Eisley is booked. Tickets are on sale for one now, being San Diego Comic-Con weekend, July 26th.
Very fun.
That is selling quickly. The VIP private pods are sold out, but there's plenty of VIP Cantina Hour tickets available still. So go get that at moshisley.com. And sooner than later, we'll be putting tickets on sale for Atlanta, which will be, what is that, August? Very last weekend of August as it...
Dragon Con.
Yeah, Dragon Con weekend.
It's the Thursday before Dragon Con, which kind of kicks off Dragon Con. So
it's a kickoff party.
Yeah, 100%. We had a lot of people that are very in love with Dragon Con because it's a unique con. It's very focused on costuming and cosplay and all of that. And it's a little more loose. There's not as, you know, it's in the, I think it's in the same hotel where they filmed Loki. I think the,
oh, sick.
One of the TVAs, right? And Atlanta's a really cool town. And so our party kind of kicks off Dragon Con weekend. That's on Thursday night. I don't think we're going to give away a theme yet, but I can certainly say, you know, make sure you've got your helmet.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Let's
just prioritize helmets.
Helmets are very cool. We really love helmets. And of course, if you're following along enough to know that, if you probably haven't figured it out, Mosh Eisley San Diego is without a doubt playing fully into the Fighter 10 USA. Bring your pilot.
Yes.
Switch from guns to blasters. Do whatever you got to do, right? So make sure you're ready to fly. We are working on some behind-the-scenes stuff with our friend Jason and Kiefer and Ramey. What they are making when we reveal this, I think is going to blow people's minds.
Yes. You haven't even seen the render from the changes we made yesterday, I guess, with Kiefer. Or day before yesterday, whatever.
Yeah.
It's really subtle.
Right.
But we made a little... I won't even move my hand in a way that makes gives anything away.
Not too much.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's
awesome.
So, moshisley.com. Go get tickets. Be there. If you can't make it to San Diego and you're anywhere... I don't know, if you're anywhere in the world and you can get to Atlanta, Dragon Con's going to be sick. I hear the parties at Dragon Con and the costuming is just completely on another level. So be there with us. Hang out. And that wraps up this week. I think we'll have Ryan next week, but Nick's still on tour, right?
Yes.
All right. So maybe we'll be a threesome next week. We'll see. Regardless, patrons, thanks for being patrons. Everyone else, thanks for watching and listening. And until next week, may the Force be with you. If you enjoy Thank the Maker, you can support us by following and leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Or you can support us directly at patreon.com/thankthemakerpod, where you can get access to our Discord server, exclusive content, exclusive merch, our recording live stream, and more. Our patrons quite literally make Thank the Maker possible.